Welcome to The Yarn, a school library journal production. I'm Colby Sharp. Rebecca Lowell's The Road to After is one of the best books that I have read so far in 2022. From the very first pages, this novel in verse is captivating. The very first thing that I had to do after finishing the book was book talk it in my fifth grade classroom. And then the second thing was to find a way to get Rebecca on The Yarn. The book talk was a hit, and a handful of my students have already fallen in love with this book, and you're about to listen to a conversation I had with Rebecca about this beautiful and important book. During our conversation, Rebecca talks about her long journey to publication, why she chooses to write for children, and her hope for this book. It's time to unravel The Road to After.
The Road to After is a work of fiction, but it's inspired by real life experience. I am a survivor of 10 years of domestic abuse, and coming out of that, I just started writing and I wanted to create something for kids. And so that's where The Road to After came from. It's a novel in verse, and it's about a girl named Lacey and her family, and they escape abuse and find a new life. So The Road to After is their road to after.
Why did you decide that you wanted to create it for children?
Well, I've always wanted to write and illustrate for kids. And when I was at RISD, the last class I took was called Picture and Word. It was with Judy Sue Goodwin Sturges. And that's where I learned about this possibility of taking the two things I loved the most, which was writing and illustrating, and combining them to become a whole new art form. And I began The Road to After thinking it was a picture book, and soon found out the content and the story needed a much bigger platform. So I basically used the picture book as sort of an outline. So as I started writing, I began it as a work for kids, because I felt like if my kids had gone through this, there were so many other kids who had too. And I realized that there weren't too many books on abuse. There are some, but none exactly as this one. And really, nothing is original and nothing is new. It's all been done before, but it hasn't been done by each individual creator. So I wanted to write it for kids. Right from the start.
How did you decide to make it a novel in verse?
So this is a really fun part, because at Hollins University, so it first began in a class called English 562 with Hillary Homsey. She is also a middle grade author. And I just started writing. Like I said, it was originally a picture book, but it was in verse. And that's just kind of how I write. But I didn't realize there was such a thing as novels in verse at that point. And CeCe Bell was the writer in residence at Hollins that summer. And we could submit pages to her to read and review. And when I had my meeting with her, she said, "You know, you're writing a novel in verse, right?" And I was like, "What? What's that?" And she pointed me to Brown Girl Dreaming. And that was the first novel in verse that I read, and I was hooked. I said, yes, this is what I want. All of the sensory details, all of the beautiful sounding language, it just brought me to a sense of place. And also the white space on the page. I felt like that was really important for this book, to give the reader some breathing room. And so from that point on, I felt like meeting with CeCe was a pivotal moment for this book.
I'm always fascinated with where the book starts. Like, did the book always start where it started? Did that change? How did you decide, like, at what point in this family's journey to start the book?
Yeah, so it always started there. And that's just kind of where, like, Linda Mullally Hunt talks about mind movies, right? In Fish in a Tree, I think. And like, I had this mind movie, like in my head, where that's where I saw this story starting. Was, I know it's kind of frowned upon to start sort of like in media res, like at this really high moment, but I couldn't see it starting any other way. And the beginning didn't change that much, except for, of course, refining the language and tightening the moment. But that initial opening of the girls, the young girls just being like, no, we're not leaving. Like, why are all these people in the house, like storming in all of a sudden? That was always there.
What was the hardest part about creating this book?
I guess you could say it was revisiting the really tough moments and thinking back of how much truth I wanted to use and how much fiction I wanted to use. And one really tough thing about this book is that the dog Mac, he was real. He was our real dog. And I didn't get to take him with us. And that always broke my heart. And I still think about him and I don't know where he is. And that's one of the hard things about leaving a home behind is all the loss that happens. And a lot of things you don't consider until it's that moment. And you're like, but wait, I want to bring him too. And you can't because of the risk that was going on. Like it was like life or death, basically. And it was like, we just got to get out of here. And so writing Mac back in with the family finding him was actually, even though it's a high point in the book, it was really hard for me because it's what I always wished happened. But it does feel good to have it happen for the characters, even though we couldn't. So, and my daughters, you know, they still ask about him. It's sad.
Have your kids read the book?
Let's see, my oldest has, and my youngest was waiting until it came out in hardcover. And I don't think she has read it just yet, but it's sitting on her dresser. And maybe she's waiting for the right moment until it feels like, yes, I'm going to pick it up. I have included them in the entire process, though. I wanted to make sure that they were okay with this being told, even though it wasn't going to be exactly them. I showed them the first pages. I showed them different versions in binders. So I told them like the whole way. I didn't want to just surprise them. Be like, here's your life in a book, you know? So I wanted to make sure they were okay with that. They're now 13 and 15.
Okay. So you wrote this book, and then what was it, the like submissions process and then ending with getting a chance to work with Nancy Paulson?
Yeah. So that was amazing and still is. So let's see, I started this book in 2016, wrote the entire first draft in February of 2017, then went back to Hollins, had, I hired Candace Ransom she's another professor at Hollins. She helped me edit it and take what was like six parts and bring it down to like three or four. So she was a miracle worker in that first draft process because I had no clue what I was doing. It was like, I've never written a novel. And then I brought that to, I brought a picture book to NESCBWI in 2018 and paid to meet with an agent. And I met with Wendy Gu of Janklow & Nesbitt Associates, and I showed her a picture book. And she said, what else do you have? And so that Monday when we got home, I emailed her and said, you know, do you want to see? And she said, yes. And so this was one of the other pieces that I sent to her. And she read it. I think she said she read it on a train. And I want to say it was either the next day or next 2 days she offered. And that was amazing. And so I signed with her. And we went out on actually two rounds of submission with this book. The first round didn't sell. We revised it again. And Nancy was in that second round. And I think, I don't know why we didn't include her in the first round. I didn't know, you know, the process is so unique. I this was my first agent. So I just trusted her with the process. And I think she was doing exactly what she thought she should do for the book. So I don't know like how the lists were made. But when Nancy saw it in that second round, she offered, and I had multiple offers come in. But when I had phone calls, I knew in that phone call with Nancy, I said, yeah, I want to work with Nancy. Yeah. And I had been a fan of her books for years, as you know, Brown Girl Dreaming. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe that it was coming full circle like that. And then the process of working with Nancy, she was the perfect editor for this book. I feel like she took everything that I wanted to keep in the story and helped it shine. And she helped me see some parts that really didn't serve the reader, but served me more than the reader, and helped me see, like, you know, maybe let go of that part, copy paste it into a new document, save it for something else, maybe use it, maybe never use it. But she was so good at finding what should stay and what should go, and helped craft the book that we have now.
Mm. I wonder what would have happened if she would have been on the first round. Like, if she would have been on the first round and didn't buy it then she probably wouldn't have been on the second round.
Maybe it wasn't ready for her at that point, because we did revise it again and again. I want to say it was at least 30 rounds of revision before Nancy even saw it. And then at least like 30 more probably with Nancy. I mean, this book has really, like, I love revision, so I enjoyed all of it, but it's really been polished, but it kept the heart.
Mm. I love that. It's been polished, but it kept the heart.
I think that's hard to do too. You know, it's like, I've heard some stories that by the time you get to the end version of the book, it's nothing like what you started, but I still feel like this book is, but even better.
So I'm really thankful. What is that heart that you're able to hold on to?
I really wanted to portray that this wasn't about physical abuse only, that maybe there was a little bit of it, but that abuse comes in many forms and it's not always what it appears to be. And this family experienced more psychological, verbal, emotional abuse more than the physical. And I really wanted to kind of break that ceiling of that stereotype and the misconception that abuse is only physical. And also that there is hope that, yeah, you know, it was a horrible thing that happened, but life doesn't have to end there, and that you can start over, and that you can reach out for help, and that there is always someone there to help you and you're not alone. So I feel like there was a lot I wanted to hit on, and we did.
Yeah. What does it feel like now that, like, your book is in the world and kids are reading it and people online are talking about it? Like, are you proud of yourself? Are you nervous? Like, what are you feeling? I mean, we're doing this interview like a week after the book came out. Like, what are you feeling?
It's been really overwhelming for good, like, for good and for bad. I'm like, what's the phrase? I think I have a really hard time taking compliments and I don't know how to respond sometimes. And so people are saying the nicest things and I'm like agonizing over my replies. I'm just like, I don't know if this sounds like grateful enough. I don't know how to do this. And it feels so good to have it in the hands of readers, but also really hard to take the compliments, but I'm getting there. Like, it's a work in progress. So if I respond to anyone, it sounds like, well, geez, that was short. It's like, 'cause I don't know what to say. It feels so amazing. And I'm so thankful. And I just don't know how to respond half the time.
I mean,
I don't know if that makes sense.
It's no, like, it does. It makes
sense. So hard. Yeah.
So I think this is like the dream though, right? Like, this is the goal all those years ago, taking all those classes.
Yep.
Back six years ago. Did you ever, is this what you thought would happen?
At one point, so I graduated RISD in 2004, and that was sort of the beginning of when I was losing my freedom. And I still wanted to do this, like, from that moment on, but for 10 years, I couldn't submit. I mean, I submitted like by mail, but really I could have never done anything with it, even if I had received an offer. That's back when we used to submit with manila envelopes and send our returns, self-addressed return envelope. And So I always wanted this, but I actually don't know if I ever believed it would happen because he used to say I was never going to get published. And by he, I mean, like, you know, the person who kept me stuck, but he used to say I was never going to get published. He hated the fact that I was creative. He hated that I did any art or writing, anything that was outside of serving him, he hated. And so I held on to this dream, but I thought life was over. Like I thought this was my life and I accepted it and that this was just going to be my reality. I never actually thought it was going to get away. And at the moment that it started affecting my kids was when I changed my mind. And it was like, I couldn't leave for myself, but I could leave for them. And at that point, I went straight back to school. I went back to doing what I love to do, applied to Hollins without really telling anyone because I didn't want anyone's opinion. I just wanted to do it. And I found myself at Hollins and dove right back in. And I think at that point, I thought, this is a possibility now that I have the freedom to do this. So it is everything I wanted and more, but certainly not easy.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you get to the point where you can take the compliments a little bit better because you should be really, really proud and really happy.
Thank you. Thank you. I am so happy. I am. Yeah.
Good. My last question is always the same, and it is, what is your hope for this book?
I hope that it inspires others to see that there is hope beyond any type of trauma or struggle, not just abuse, but we all go through tough things. And it can seem like in the moment of the worst part of that tough thing, that it's never going to get better. And I just hope that readers take this book in and think of how they can apply it to their situation and know that it will get better, that all will be okay, and reach out for help. And also for those who see others struggling to reach out to help them, you know, be willing to lend a hand and be willing to take a hand. Both are tough sometimes.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Yarn. Thank you to Rebecca Lowell for taking the time to chat with me. Rebecca, I cannot wait to see what you create next. Thank you to Philip Stead for creating our theme song. Additional music for this episode comes to us from the Free Music Archive. Thank you to Heinemann Publishing for sponsoring this episode. Thank you to my friend, Travis Yonker, for helping me produce this episode. Travis, I'm thinking Warriors and Six will be our NBA Finals results. There's nothing like Game 6, Clay. I'm Colby Sharp. Thanks for listening.